This is the beginning of Class 10.
Sasi Bhurghi Jushin Heto Chan Vira Vinci Nyende Yampati Sangye Shindu Mitte Uwahi Jogu Nanda Shimla because that state of mind has desire, meaning the state of mind at death has desire. Dharmakirti is giving this argument to whom? Charvaka, okay, Hindu. And they're supposed to buy this. I didn't feel comfortable with it. You know, I don't even think, you know, I don't see how it works. I don't see the mechanism by which having desire in your mind that you're deaf is going to ensure that you have another state of mind, some sorry state. I don't understand it. You know, I wasn't satisfied with it. But it seems to be important. It seems to be the key to not going back to samsara. You know, to not getting born into this lousy kind of life. This is a lousy kind of life. If you could get out of it to a nicer kind of life, it'd be great. And, you know, and that's just Buddhism. That's the whole point of Buddhism. You know, you don't have to die, you don't have to get old, you don't have to live this kind of lousy and thinky life. You know, you can, there is a better one, you can get there, you just have to know how.
You still don't understand the mechanism that you're going
to
teach
us. Well, I don't see how a charaka is supposed to buy this.
Oh, I see. Well,
and I don't understand perfectly the mechanism either. And I'm going to talk about that tonight. I think it's important.
So it's not explained in the study
of the practice. Oh, we're going to go through the whole thing. Michael, could you bring me that Wheel of Life picture?
But this one doesn't seem any less understandable.
Yeah, I know. They wouldn't buy the other ones either. Not all of those other proofs are meant to be. I mean, there's different levels of proof.
Why didn't you agree with me? That's what I said, because this is what you are doing.
I don't know if you can see it. I mean, it would be a whole course to teach you the Wheel of Life.
Sorry, I really got lost, but I got everything down except for the last line. Have desire, chakshu.
Because that state of mind is death, has the emotion of desire. Has desire. That's why he's going to have to take a future life.
Excuse me, what's the key?
Of.
Has desire of.
In Tibet, you have to say a mind of having desire.
No, I didn't get the second line. You're probably too much.
Consider the mind of a normal person at the moment of death.
Mm-hmm.
It will have to pass, it will have to cross over into a new mind. Meaning a new lousy, suffering mind. Why? Because at the moment of death, that mind has desire.
What's
the intention? It is. Cheer means become. I didn't think you guys cared about this. Okay.
Could you?
You did.
Has desire of chakshuki and vipa. I'm sorry, I forget what it
means. Mind. Yinba means is, and cheer means become.
Thank you very much.
So I don't have time to go over the whole Wheel of Life. It's a big subject. It's a great subject. You probably have to do a whole course on it sometimes. But we're going to concentrate on four of the links. Okay? The 12 links of dependent origination are contained in the Wheel of Life. They're here. They start here, and they go clockwise. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 12. Okay? You all right? You can't see it very well, but I'll... By the way, anyone can have one of these posters. We have a lot. Someone gave them to us. And if you treat it nice, I'll give you one. Maybe it's when you come to take your final. The second link here is a man making pot. And that's called Dujeki Le, Samskara. And there's a lot of strange translations, a lot of lousy translations. What it means is the karma that you collect during your life. Making karma. Doesn't it make sense? You have a guy there making pot. Okay? That's all it means. You can see compositional factors and you don't know what it means. Right? I mean, people translate it very weird stuff. It has nothing to do with it. It's the making of karma during your life. That's the second link. If all these other links occur during your life, you get to link number 8. 8. Okay? Link number 8, if you want to come up and see it after, you know, during the break. There's a man, there's a lady pouring wine into a man's cup. There's normally a man pigging out, having a feast. And That's number eight. Link number eight is called craving. Number eight is called craving. Number nine, Grupa Lemba, is usually it's a monkey grabbing fruits, and this one is a person. But normally it's a monkey grabbing a fruit, and that's grasping. So there's craving and then grasping. Those are link number eight and link number nine.
What is it, a monkey?
It's usually a monkey grabbing for a fruit, and that's grasping. I'll explain them later. Chupa Sipa, number 10, is normally a pregnant woman. Here they have a man and a woman lying together, but normally it's a pregnant woman. And that's the one they translate as becoming or existence. And that means ripe karma. Very, very ripe karma. The kind of karma that can make you take another life. Now, where does, by the way, number 10, which is ripe karma, is just number 2, the karma that you did during your life, suddenly made potent. It's made, I like to compare it to plutonium, you know, like there are people running around with plutonium nowadays, but if you got a bag of plutonium, you can't do anything with it. You need another TNT explosive inside of it, and that one blows up, and then the plutonium blows up. You need a trigger. The bomb needs a trigger. There has to be a normal explosive inside the plutonium to make it blow, or else it won't blow up. And this is the same. Yipa Kujiki Leza, the second link, which is the karma that you've done during your life, physical, mental, or verbal, can't do anything unless it's triggered. It has to become ripe karma before it can what?
Blow up in your face.
And create
another you.
A new life, which is, you know, naturally the next thing. Here's a woman giving birth. That's birth. That's rebirth.
11 is birth?
We'll get to that.
11? Is that this one?
Not exactly. Similar.
Are you saying 11 is birth or 12 is birth?
11 is birth. Number 11 is birth. 12 is old age and death. But we're not going to go into the whole link.
Why don't you turn the air down?
Okay. Okay. So number 11 here is very graphic. It's a lady getting birth. So... why does it birth come after number 2?
Because it has to ripen.
It has to ripen. Something has to trigger it. Something has to make it potent. Some other thing has to occur for karma to cause a new birth. And that thing are these two links, number 8 and number 9. What are they?
Craving
and grasping. Okay. That's the key to Dharmakirti's argument. Why?
The desire.
He said desire. He said if the mind has desire, when?
Time of death.
At the moment of death. Then that mind will flow on, flop over into a new mind. Now we finally saw where really the first moment of your mind came from. What was the material cause that turned into the first moment of your mind? It was the last moment of your mind and the last mind.
What kind of desire?
What's that? We're going to get into it in great detail. And that's why this class is important. It's a sweet subject for the 10th class.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you can do all kinds of really awful things as long as it's not connected to grasping.
We're
going to
talk about it. I mean, that was the feeling I felt people had last class. That's why I wanted people to come to this class. You know, when Dharmakirti gives this argument, he says, I mean, what we call the kyaba, the dokyap, Jacob, the logical inferences here are if you could die without desire, you'd be okay. Yeah. Seems like he's saying that.
I'm having a little problem with definitions of different types of causes.
We'll get there.
Well,
are they near linkage you? Near linkage you? The
well,
material cause?
I understand material cause.
Okay. What other cause?
The first problem that I have is that you use the term in the first two questions in the homework, in the quiz, unique cause.
Yes.
But in the text, unique cause is used in the way that you would not use material cause.
Right. That's why you use a different word.
So I assume that when you say unique cause, you mean material cause.
No, not necessarily.
Well,
that's
I mean,
why
how are we supposed to know what you're talking about?
When I say unique, it's different. Now, what's unique? Unique means unique in the arguments about body and mind has a lot of meaning, but it basically means the one that's such that it basically refers to the way that body, according to the non-Buddhist, is said to support the mind. It's a different subject than we're on now.
Okay, and then
but it's to distinguish from an ordinary basis to say a unique or special basis. Dharmakirti accepts that the body is an ordinary basis for the mind. It contributes to supporting the mind. It does, in a way, base the mind. But it's not a unique basis. It's not such that it turns into the mind or something like that.
But are you referring to unique cause or material cause in question one?
I don't remember what was the question.
When you talked about it.
What was the question?
Consider the first proof, the seventh proof.
Which one?
Consider the element, the internal element in the form of sense power.
Okay. All right.
They're not the unique cause.
Is it unique cause or unique basis?
The cause.
Cause of it.
Okay.
Well, that's just the wording that they used in the text. But I would say in that case, in that proof, it means nearly.
Mm-hmm.
It does mean the material cause.
And then in the text, we have the term projecting cause. What is a projecting cause?
We're going to talk about that.
We are.
Yeah. Okay. So 8 and 9 are the trigger. So you want to know the nature of 8 and 9. That's what I'm saying. And it's very important for a normal person. It's very important. If somehow you could affect number 8 and 9 as you die, then you'd be saved a lot of future lives. Lousy lives, okay?
But it's not just... You talk about the unripened karma from this life that you've accumulated, ripening at that moment of death, based on your emotions, your desire, craving, whatever.
Yeah.
But there's also karma from previous lives.
That too.
That affects too. Rebirth.
Yeah. You also have that. It's in your pocket. It's in your karmic pocket.
So
now, whether or not it will blow up depends on these two emotions. I don't call them even emotions, but they call it on these two mental states.
So those are the trigger for...
Hmm? Yeah, all past karma.
All past karma.
Whatever karma is going to create your next life. Mainly karma in this life, but it could be also karma from last life. All right, so we got to talk about the nature of those two.
Then how would you go from life to life carrying anything that was previous to the present life?
We're going to discuss that in the next course. At the end of the next course.
At least you're not saying 4 years.
We're going to, in the early part of the next course, we're going to study the principles of karma according to Abhidhamma. And the last two classes, say, of the next course, we'll discuss the mind-only school explanation of how karma is transmitted. And it's a great explanation, and it's accepted by the highest schools. They say that's fine. In fact, they accept the Abhidharma's presentation of karma also, basically. So it's a nice way to present it. Okay, so we got to talk a little bit about Gepa and Gupa, number 8 and number 9. I'll give you the definition of number 8. You don't have to have it word for word, but you just understand it. It says, Sorwitandalathene, which means based on the seventh link. Okay? Based on link number 7. Which is what? You have a guy with an arrow in his eye. What do you think that represents?
Pain?
Ignorance.
Feeling. Sensation. The ability to feel. Based on the ability to feel, okay,
physical sensation.
It could be physical or mental pain or pleasure. Based on the ability to feel, which is link number 7, it is the desire not to be separated from, It is the desire not to be separated from its object. What does that mean? All these links here, which occur after you're born, represent the development of the body and the senses. And they represent milestones in the life of a young person. He gets his first, his sense organs develop for the first time. He has his first contact with outside objects. He gets his first consciousnesses growing from those contacts. Those consciousnesses start to have emotions and feelings. He has certain kinds of contact, like his food and then sex. And then he starts to feel good. And that's sort of what. He starts to have good and bad feelings. His psyche develops to a point to where he can feel good things and feel bad things. And then he starts to get naturally what? The desire to not to lose the nice feelings. And that's what basically human endeavors are. Most of all human endeavors in the world are based on trying not to get separated from what you want. It's always stated negatively, by the way. I don't know why, but it's important, apparently. And you know, this is one of those things where a good lama will say, I don't know why the text always says it negatively. We'll go look for the reason. But please be sure to pass it on this way to your students. You know, it's the desire not to be separated from its object. And that's only possible because you have the capacity to feel good.
Well, because it's more stimulated by the threat of it being withdrawn than it is by the satisfaction.
Yeah, I think, well, we're going to talk about it. But mostly people spend their lives trying not to lose whatever nice things they have. That's the function of getting up.
Taking place over a period of time. I mean,
there's three or four explanations. Some take a moment, some take a minute, and some explanations take 3, 4, 5 months. So there's a whole school on that. Now, I'm not going to go into it. It's a whole study of its own. We spend months on it in the monastery. Okay. Three kinds of craving. So now you know the definition of craving, right? We're talking about the definition of the link of craving. Three kinds of the eighth link. Right. Three kinds of craving. This is the trigger that triggers your karma. If you could get rid of this trigger, you wouldn't have to be reborn. That's the idea of an arhat. Dur means desire, and se means craving. Se is the general word for craving. Dursa means desire craving. What does that mean? It's defined as yuyiola in Dojo Visava, which means the craving which desires not to lose an attractive object. The craving which desires not to lose an attractive object. That's Dursa. On your homework, don't just put desire craving.
Say it again.
Ah,
Shannon.
Craving not to lose. You're going to make your mother take another life. Desire not to lose an attractive object. Jeep means fear. Like Jeep Chi is Yaman Taka. Se means desire. So Jikse means desire. What do you think? What do you get?
The fear of losing.
The wish to avoid.
Yeah, it's the craving which wishes to avoid an unpleasant.
Is say mean craving or desire?
Same. I like to use the word say craving for sepa because derpa is more desire. Sepa is supposed to make you. Sepa is supposed to give you the feeling of sort of an intense desire. That's the difference between Dupa and Sepa in Tibetan.
Could you repeat that again? Jekpa? The craving?
It's the desire to be is the desire to lose an unattractive object. You know, like when you walk down the corridor at work and this guy you don't like is walking down toward you, and you kind of turn down the hallway if you can. You know? That's jise. Right? Jise is, you know, grabbing for that position. You know? That's jise. We have both.
So jise is desire craving?
You can call it desire craving, but what it means is the desire not to be separated from attractive object. It's simply given that name. You know, desire craving. And they're all desire, right?
Yeah, but number one is also desire.
It is. Those are just, they're not descriptive names. They are just names. Sisei, the word literally means craving for existence. Se means craving. Si, same spelling except a different vowel, right? So he. Sisei means existence, craving for existence. What is this wheel of life called in Tibetan? Sipe kolo. That's the si, the sisei. Sipe kolo means wheel of life, wheel of existence. So sisei means craving for existence. How is it defined? Chiwetse dakshe doki jikbe kubula sipe chela, which means a craving which craves for yourself. Okay. Because at the moment of death, you fear that you are ending. It's a craving for me, because at the moment of death, I have this great intense fear that I am ending.
You fear you're ending?
You think you are. The word in Tibetan is che. Che means discontinued, chopped off.
So wait, it's for your ego? I mean, is it anything
to do
with the ego?
Now, that's a good question. It's a very nice question.
No,
okay. Is it related to grasping for self-existence? It's obviously very, very close, right? And it's what makes people scream when the airplane is falling down. They have this tape of that airplane that flipped over, and the people are talking, you know, and then they're struggling to control the airplane, and then for the last 30 seconds, it's obvious that nothing's going to happen, and they're headed straight down, and they're just screaming, you know, they're just screaming. Sisei is expressing itself, you know. They think, they truly believe at that moment that they are going to end. And they have this sefa, they have this craving. Craving asserts itself very strongly in the last moments. You truly believe you're going to end and you don't want it to happen. And you will do anything. If someone holds you over a rooftop and tries to push you, you will fight back. Sisei will fight back. Sisei is afraid that it's going to, that I'm going to end now. And that's sisei. All three are active, or constitute the eighth link. It means that the craving that triggers your rebirth involves all three of these. But mainly which one?
The last one.
The last one, obviously. Obviously the last one. Obviously it's the sisei. It's the desire for existence, the craving for existence. It's that fear that you are ending, which helps trigger the karma that you've had in your life, and then blows it up, makes it blow up.
So what's the difference between that and grasping?
Now we're going to talk about, that's the next thing I was going to talk about. What's the difference between that craving and number nine, which is grasping? Number nine is defined as, I'll define it for you, which simply means the craving of link number eight increased to a very high degree. I don't know how to say it anyway. The craving of link eight, you know, increased to a very, very high state. Apparently there's 2 degrees of this trigger. There's 2 degrees of the emotion or the mental function which at the moment of death triggers your karma. And one of them is like the very last moment when your desire to live, the desire not to end gets very powerful. And that's gupa. That's number nine. Number nine is the actual trigger. Jepa is all the stages that lead up to it. Now, what's the relationship between those two mental functions, right? Those two emotions as you die, and craving for self, the ignorance which sees self-existence. We got to talk about that. The key is in there somewhere. Okay. I don't see how just wanting not to die would force you to go into another mind stream. You know what I mean? I still don't see why. And the answer is in deep in the scriptures, and it has to do with grabbing to self-existence at that point. And we'll talk about that after today. I have some... am I at time today?
It's just very fast.
Well, you know... Jiktokta is a very, very strange word. View of the perishable assemblage. View of the perishable assemblage. There is no nice translation. It's easier to describe it than to try to explain the word. It's to grasp you or the things that belong to you as self-existence. It's the habit of grasping to yourself and the parts of you as self-existence.
So it's implied that it's the wrong view of the perishable.
Yeah. It is a wrong view. There are five wrong views. It's one of them. When they say ignorance, causes this wheel, spins this wheel.
That's the thing.
And when you see the two blind men with sticks, you know, ignorance, it is this very mental function. It's this one mental function, which is the ignorance, which spins the wheel. Not just not knowing something or not being aware of something. It's not that kind of ignorance. It's the active grasping to yourself as self-existence.
Would that be wrong view?
Excuse me?
Would that be wrong view?
It's one of the five wrong views. You'll study it one day. There's six major... I mean, I'm not... This is not part of the topic. There are six major mental illnesses. Nyomo, klesha. And one of them is ignorance, or view, wrong view. And that has five forms. There's a total of ten, really. That's the answer to your question. We'll do it someday. Jiktokta is the villain. Okay, Jiktokta, that ignorance, that view, is the villain. And we'll talk more about it in a second.
When you first defined the view of the perishable assembly, you said the habit of grasping at self and others.
I should have said what belongs to you. I should have said you and your part.
Okay.
You and yours. Meaning your arms, your legs, your mind. Okay. Not meaning your house, your kids, your family. Okay. Meaning
you and you can
say that. You and your part. How's that? Jel means to not to have something. To lose something. It's actually the word I've been using all night when it said, you know, lose something you like, don't lose something you don't, you know. Chir means because. Chir means because. Lam, you know. What's Lam?
Path.
Like Lam Rim, steps up the path. Tangor means at the beginning. And the Lam here, by the way, you make a note, is the path of steam. What number is that of the five paths?
Third.
Number three. Why is it called path of steam?
It's where you experience emptiness directly.
Directly. The first moment. It's the process of seeing emptiness directly for the first time in trillions and trillions, actually endless lives, beginning of life. It's losing your virginity. It happens once in the whole length of your trillions of lifetimes. It happens once. and you see emptiness directly for the first time.
You mean afterwards you see, you've seen emptiness once, you'll get that seeing again?
You'll see it many times again.
Oh.
But I'm talking about that first time. And you've changed totally after that. You're a totally different kind of being after that. You're an Arya. And Arya has a big meaning. There's only two kinds of beings in the universe. You're either an Arya or you're not. You've either had this experience or you haven't had it. And once you have had this experience, you're on your way out. That's why you're called a stream member. You see your future lives. You see how many lives it's going to be. You meet Buddha. You see the truth of suffering directly. All these things happen within that couple hours.
Is it possible if this happens to one of us experience lifetime?
You would know.
How would you know?
You would know. Because the lives that you will live after the moment that you see it are exceptional. You know, you live, you're always born in a comfortable family, you never have much to go wrong in your life, you're always successful, I mean, basically. Even the last few samsaric lives are very comfortable.
Are you involved in Dharma necessarily?
You might not be as a child, but you will be attracted to it and get into it at an early age.
But when
you're
anybody that is out of Dharma, that
has
a happy life, basically.
You don't know.
So are they Arya?
I'm talking to someone which I can never get out of here.
What about lamas?
Some
lamas who have, like, difficult lives. What about all lamas who get kicked
out of Tibet?
They're
either pretending or...
really not
this is a little off, but I just don't get, I mean, since we start with the omniscient being in the beginning of this, what I don't get is, if everybody can become a Buddha, and these are all separate mind streams, so is there some, it almost seems like there's some plan that we're all supposed to become Buddhas in some point in time.
We will study that, someday. But it is the Sangyekirik. It is the Rakshinyari. It's the Buddha nature of a being. We have to study that subject. It's
isn't
a long subject.
There's a sutra.
And it's a beautiful subject. Will. It's a deep subject. And it takes
but
a long time.
But then what happens if everybody becomes... Then what happens? Sorry.
Buddha,
I mean, does the world...
Buddha used to joke about it. He said, well, was everybody going to retire? You know, I don't know. It will come.
So then certain worlds will disappear.
Oh, yes.
So then other worlds will... I mean, then there will be other
there
kinds
be
of
no
worlds?
There will be no more
hell. Yeah, but Michael, if that's the point, what about the great mama, supposedly the great mama that came out of Tibet, and they were pushed out of Tibet? I mean, that's not really happy thing to happen to them. And supposedly they are...
But
Buddha.
You have no idea if they're putting it on. Mao Zedong was a bodhisattva. Was it a plan? You don't know. That was the first thing Buddha said at the beginning of this class. You really don't know. You don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You don't know what?
I don't know. I can't tell you that Mao Zedong wasn't the bodhisattva in collusion with all the Tibetan lamas and they made up this whole thing together. I don't know. Possibly. Okay. Lamdo. With the bodhisattva, I mean, a bodhisattva can pretend to live a whole life of 50 years in order to talk to you for 10 minutes.
See?
You would do that.
See?
You would do that.
See?
You would get close to you for your whole life just to have a conversation with you at age 30 or 40 to affect your mind. It's worth it for you. It's possible. Not at all impossible. Lamdo Gorni, at the beginning, see me. See you know, because this was Siddha Kola. Let's see me. Life, you know, another life. In this case, it means rebirth. Life in the sense of a rebirth. Man means what?
No.
There will, there is not. Jura means there wouldn't, where there would be no. There would be no rebirth.
What is ni?
Ni is a pillar.
Oh.
He needs to make it be. Down here, you're going to see him cram two beats into one because he has to make his beat the other way. So what does it mean? It means if you got rid of this view, this wrong view, I should say, I want to rephrase that. if getting rid of any kind of this wrong view.
Any kind?
If getting rid of any kind of this wrong view, we're going to talk about it. I'll repeat it. Yeah. If getting rid of any type of this wrong view could stop your rebirth, that's what the first line means. Okay? If getting rid of any kind of this wrong view could stop your rebirth, then at the beginning of the path of seeing, third path, right? You would reach a state where you didn't have to take birth anymore.
Okay, if getting rid of this kind of wrong view.
If getting rid of any kind of this wrong view.
Then at the beginning of what?
Got you out of rebirth, you know, stopped all your rebirth. Then the minute you see emptiness directly, what? You'd never have to take a rebirth. But that's not true.
Well, are you saying that you permanently lose the view at the
We're going to talk about it. I want to. You don't have to write this down. Just listen. There's three levels I'm talking about. I saw people's ears prick up in the last class when Dharmakirti said the reason you have to take a rebirth is at the moment of your death you have desire. So I got this feeling that people were thinking, oh, you know, I could collect all the karma I want, get to the last moment of my life, clean up my act in that last 10 minutes, my other karma, all that karma wouldn't be activated, and I wouldn't be reaching nirvana. You know? I mean, it sounds like that, right? And that's not what it means to have desire at the last moment of your life. That's what I'm trying to say. Having desire at the last moment of your life means grasping to a self-existent view. And wanting that self-existent you to be happy. And wanting that self-existent you not to get lost. And that's what triggers your karma. It's not just that you want something. And this relates to a very bad view, I think, that's prevalent among people who don't study Buddhism very well. Which is they think that Buddhists somehow reach a point where they don't care about anything. They don't want anything. Well then, don't you want nirvana? Don't you want to be a Buddha? Don't you want to help other living beings? I mean, is being a Buddhist, is the perfection of your practice to somehow reach some state where you don't care about anything, you don't want anything? You know, it just doesn't ever make sense to me. And it's a prevalent viewpoint among Buddhist schools. You hear it in Buddhist teaching sometimes. Or you get that feeling that, oh, I'm not a good Buddhist because I actually want to get out of samsara. You know, when I reach this high state, I won't even want to get out of samsara. It's obviously not right. You want to get out of samsara. You want to get out of pain. Okay. What I mean is that sepa that we talked about, link number 8, craving. Is it wrong for you to want to get out of samsara? Isn't that a form of craving?
I mean, isn't it really a qualitatively different kind of emotion?
Well, that's what I asked you right now. I mean,
no,
is wanting to get out of samsara, which is an undesirable object, craving? And could that trigger a rebirth? Could it act as a cause for samsara rather than the way to get out of samsara? Is renunciation craving?
I think it depends upon the motivation.
Well, think about it. I mean, I want to get to a place of permanent pleasure. I want that. That's why I became a monk. That's why I'm a Buddhist. I enjoy pleasure. I like it. I want to get to a place. I do. Frankly, I do. I want to reach a point where I'm happy all the time. And I want to avoid a place where I have to get old and die and see bad things happen, things I don't like. And that's the reason I'm here.
Well, so if the craving, doesn't it have a different karmic effect?
Is that bad? Is that wrong? Is that the
doesn't, doesn't it have a different karmic effect from other cravings?
Well, wait a minute, though. I mean, it's a craving. It, what you should be saying, or what you mean, I guess, by saying craving to get out of samsara, that's one and the same thing as saying wishing to see myself as I truly am, which is, at that point, what self is there? Who's craving what? What's craving who?
No, I don't. I don't think like that.
Yeah, well, that's what it means.
The Buddha.
Samsara means seeing yourself the wrong way.
On your homework.
No.
The Buddha perceives himself. The Buddha. This is the most. This is the first way of perceiving yourself. It's called unanalyzed, unchecked, just the Buddha. When he looks at the Buddha, he says me, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's okay. Even the Buddha thinks of himself as me. Okay. And the example given in the scripture is, the Buddha thinks his begging bowl is his. The Buddha thinks his robes are his. And if someone came up and stole them, the Buddha does think they're stealing my begging bowl. He has an awareness of that as being his, and of himself as being me. And there's nothing wrong with that.
That's called the Yu-Gi-Oh!
Tom Kiley's unexamined perception of Tom Kiley is acceptable. There is a Tom Kiley. It's a tema. It's a pramana. You see a Tom Kiley. To deny a Tom Kiley would be ridiculous.
Right, but the way the way I believe that Tom Kiley exists, and the way the Buddha believes the Buddha exists, are two different things.
But on what I'm saying is,
and that difference is samsara.
On an unexamined level, the way you just, you know, I'm Mike Gross. That's all. That's not wrong. There's nothing bad about it. There's nothing jigsaw thought about it. It's okay. It's unexamined, conventional,
without judgment.
So don't mix that up with. Now we'll get to the bad one. Okay. The bad one is to want Michael Roche to be happy and misperceive who he is. And who is he? He's a blank. And I'm perceiving him as Michael Roche in a certain form because I'm forced to by what? My karma, my past deeds. I'm blank. I could have been Yamantaka. I could have been Gautama Buddha. You know, I could have been Vajrayogini. I'm blank. I could be seeing myself that way. I didn't get the right colors in line. I messed up. And that's why I have to see myself as getting old and going to die. You know, that I didn't prepare the right causes. And now this blank thing I must see as Michael Wood, as a samsara.
And we're craving to continue to see that wrong thing.
I'm trying to make myself happy simply by wanting to be happy. And I'm trying to make myself happy by doing deeds which are not the right ones to make myself happy. And that's in me. And that's a misperception of my nature. So if I want Michael Roche to be happy, it has nothing to do with, you know, outsmarting someone else at my job, or, you know, being able to corner the market on donuts. You know, but that's not how I'm going to get happy. I have to do good deeds. I have to forget all the temporary causes that are involved. I have to go for the real causes that are going to make me.
So if you see yourself as a mind stream, you're saying that that is then legitimate? I mean...
Oh yeah, I am a mind stream. What do you want?
No, because I've always been very confused about this.
They say in Tibetan, they say, Chetan. That's why I'm talking about it. You know what I mean? That's why we're talking about it. Because otherwise this whole stuff is very confusing.
I never could understand. They say that you're empty, but then they say there's something that continues on. So what's continuing on if you're empty? You know, I've always been left.
Yeah, I am blank.
So if you say I am a mind stream, that's okay.
I really prefer blank. Blank gives you the right idea. The word blank is correct.
But mind stream.
You're blank.
But mind stream has a sense of continuation, whereas blank doesn't.
There's moments of consciousness that are blank. Even the mind streamness of it is a appellation.
But if you say that each one of these mind streams are separate, which you say, then there is something very continuous about this mind stream.
Of course. It's your heart. But we're not going to talk about it. What I'm saying is that what triggers karma, what makes that desire bad desire, is the misperception of yourself linked with the wrong actions that inspires. If all your normal activities aimed at getting some kind of contentment or happiness in this life are misdirected. If you knew what you were doing, you would just go out and do the most charitable things you could do, because that's the only cause for you to see your blank self as happy. It's not figuring out how to do the best business deal or figuring out how to find the person you like, or it's that's just wrong. And if you do those deeds, you're proving that you don't understand your nature and you have ignorance, and that will cause you trouble.
So what is it that becomes happy, or what is it that becomes a Buddha?
You have a perception of a blank thing as happy.
What is this blank
thing? And that perception
thing
is forced on you by karma.
What is this
your
blank
heart
thing?
Your mind and your body.
Your mind and your body?
Mm-hmm.
So you go beyond the formless realm into...
No, you see your mind and your body as happy. And when you focus on your mind, you see the parts of your mind as your mind. When you focus on one of the parts of your mind, you see the last moment and the next moment as the mind. And it's endless. And it's okay. And it works. And that's how you'll be a Buddha. That's Nagarjuna's viewpoint, so it comes to be pure middle way.
So you just
and everything
keep
else
focusing
is just false. That's how you will become a Buddha.
When you focus on parts of your mind, you see the last moment and the next moment,
what
and
I'm
that's
saying
how it
is
continues.
You always go, you're always looking at the part and imputing the mind, the whole one. You see the parts of yourself and call it Lee. And when you focus on your body, you see the arms and legs.
Hmm.
You call them Lee's body.
Hmm.
And then when you focus on Lee's arms, you see Lee's hand, Lee's wrist, and Lee's elbow. When you focus on Lee's elbow, you see the upper part of her elbow and the lower part of her elbow. You call that elbow. And you can go back endlessly.
Like the pencil, right?
But there's no good or bad attachment.
Sure. If I see a mortal elbow, a breakable elbow, an arm that has pain, that's because I did the deeds to force myself to see that.
No, but when you're talking about looking at your body and sort of just labeling it,
well,
body,
no, I'm just describing what you do as a result of your karma.
And the preferable focus.
And you'll reach a point in your career, Dharma career, where out of cold knowledge, you do the right things, and then you'll be forced to see yourself as a Buddha.
Michael, what about you?
That first one. And I've described four kinds of grasping at yourself, or four ways of seeing yourself. And you better know, it could be on the whole. The first one. Is what we call conventional perception of me. That's fine. I am Michael Rush. Come on. Teme drupe echa, because I fought with a tema. I am Michael Rush. Is that wrong? Is that somehow mistaken? Is that not a tema? No, not at all. The second level of seeing yourself. I'm Michael Rush. I see myself existent, except I see myself as self-existent, and I believe myself to be self-existent. How does that manifest itself? I think I can be happy by manipulating causes that have nothing to do with my happiness.
I believe I can be happy by manipulating causes.
Manipulating causes that have nothing to do with my happiness. And that's how we spend our lives. Now there's a person who has seen emptiness directly. How is he different from the second person I described?
He sees himself as self-existent but doesn't believe he
right
is.
Right.
By
the way, I'm talking about, very important, I'm talking about after he comes down out of that first experience. Okay. While he's in that experience, forget it, it's a different thing. But when he comes down, he sees himself as self-existent, but he knows he's wrong. He doesn't even believe himself anymore. He sees, but he does not believe it.
But they have been
on number three.
Yeah, directly.
Michael,
this is
number three.
That was number three. Number two is like people who haven't seen emptiness directly yet. They see it and they believe it.
And what about manipulating causes?
That's what I do when I'm at number two.
Right.
Arya no longer collects karma.
Just after having seen emptiness the first time.
Yeah. He no longer collects the causes for suffering.
Even if he gets
very
angry.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Even if he gets angry.
Very interesting. We'll debate it sometime. It's a huge debate in the monastery. There's a reputable text that says he doesn't collect. Kind of comment. Okay, number four. Big debate. I don't say it's an easy thing. We have to debate.
No, no, it sounds like a
negative karma.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. Number four.
No.
What do you guess at number four?
No.
Buddha.
Buddha or an arhat. No longer sees himself and no longer believes himself. He never did believe, right, since he was an arhat. But now, he's purified himself to such a point that he doesn't even see things as something.
I
realize
it's
a habituation.
That's what the path of habituation is for, to go from three to four.
No longer sees himself as self-existent.
And doesn't believe it anymore. And that's why there's five paths and not only four. It takes number four to get to number five. Which of those four can trigger your karma at the moment of death?
Two.
Which of those four people have to take Nipa?
Two. Three also.
Two and three.
Oh.
That's where, by the way, there in number three is where you get those once returners.
Well, why number three?
Non-returners. Re-venturers. You got to study that someday.
I can get that.
Guy number two is a person who has not reached the path of seeing. He sees things as self-existent and he believes them as self-existent. And if he dies in that state, he will trigger his karma. His karma will get triggered because he will look at himself and wish himself to be happy or wish himself not to end, and it'll be an ignorant perception of himself. That's what I'm saying. It's not just enough to desire. Therefore, it's not enough at the last moment of your life just to not have desire for 5 minutes as you die and you're okay. It doesn't work that way.
Well, it couldn't. I mean, if you had desire your whole life, you couldn't just the last 10 minutes
just
say, oh, I don't
know. That's why this Pola stuff, you have to study Pola. There is a Galupa Pola. It's very secret. It's very fine. And it's very, very delicate. And that's that whole thing is, but the likelihood of living a very lousy life, and then in the last 5 minutes, in the most terrifying moments of your existence, thinking clearly and doing the right thing, it's beyond impossible.
There's an irony at work in here as well, because that second person is going to be very terrified at the prospect of there being an end to their mind stream, which can't be. They're terrified of something that couldn't exist.
They didn't study enough of Dharmakirti, and they do believe they're going to have it.
And
they're going to end.
Yeah.
You not only have to study Dharmakirti's truths, you have to meditate on them so much that it becomes part of your being. And at the moment of death, it's so strong in you that it doesn't get pushed aside by your fear at that moment. That's going to take a lot of
time. They're afraid of something that couldn't happen if they did everything to try to make it happen.
We, not they.
Michael, did you translate the
So it's number two and three which are going to trigger.
No.
That's why Arya still has to take rebirth until they become
cleaned out.
Uh-huh.
Purified.
Alright. So, what he's saying is, I ask you a question. If you got rid of ignorance in the form of grasping to a self-existent me, would your karma be triggered?
Say that again?
If you got rid of ignorance as jikto thought, meaning perceiving a self-existent you, if you got rid of that kind of ignorance, would you have to take rebirth? If you got rid of the kind of ignorance which sees me as self-existent, or believes me as self-existent, would you have to take rebirth?
No.
So why does he say, just because you don't have that view, doesn't mean you don't have to take rebirth? He's talking about the first type. It's called intellectual grasping. That's the one where you don't believe it, but you do still see it. What he's saying is, even if you reach that point where you no longer believe in yourself, itself existence, it's not enough to stop your rebirth.
The number three is...
You have, right. Even if you reach number...
Three.
It's not good enough to get out of rebirth. Because if it were enough, then you would get out of rebirth at the first moment of the...
Now, Michael, some beings must, in the same way that they become an Arya, apply themselves
exactly.
And go all the way
exactly.
through.
They are called, there's even a name for them.
But those are also the people who achieve nirvana in this life and then they have the remainder, right?
There is a kind of being who does it in the one life.
Right.
They go from Arya to Arhat in one life.
Right.
In the same life.
Intellectual grasping and
believing. I'm saying this. You could say intellectual. You could say believing in the self. Okay. What he's saying is believing in the self existence of yourself. Getting rid of that believing is not enough to get rid of the triggers. The two triggers that trigger your karma when you die. You must get rid of the tenge. Tenshi ke means that innate grasping to a self, which all beings have. In fact, it is the very seeing of a thing as self-existent. It's the predilection, it's the habit of seeing things as self-existent, which even an Arya has, after he comes down. And you have to get rid of that. Much more difficult.
Michael? Let's say that you reach the path of habituation, you no longer see yourself as a self.
You no longer believe yourself.
You no longer believe yourself as a self, but you know that you've accrued bad karma. So couldn't you be, even though you know that your self doesn't exist, couldn't you have fear that the negative karma might trigger a rebirth even though you don't believe in your own existence?
Right. That's exactly what happens. Unless in that same life he becomes an arhat. Because if he doesn't, he does get these two, and it is triggered, and he does have to be born again, and that's why there are all those classifications called stream enterer, once returner, and non-returner. Those are all people who have to be born again.
So, in other words, if you don't see yourself and you know that yourself is not self-existent, even though you have bad karma, you won't feel fear.
Yeah, that's a good point. Arhat's pockets are full of bad karma. But they just don't have the triggers, so they never think of
them. What about Buddhists?
They have collected piles of bad karma, but they don't have the triggers. It's not that they've cleaned out all the bad karma. The karma is there. It's never triggered.
It's
never activated.
It'll never be, it'll never grow with that.
No. It'll never produce a result.
Now, I thought that same was for Buddhists as well, but you disagree with me in the last class about that.
I mean,
I thought Rinpoche taught that even Buddhists have the same phenomenon. Because I asked him, is it a matter of cleaning out all of your bad karma before you can reach Buddha? And he said, no, so much of it, even Buddhists have it. Yeah?
It's sort of the difference between Jain and Buddhist. What did Jain say? I mean, in India, if you talk to Buddha Shah, he'll say, you can never become it.
It's too long.
It's impossible. You can't prevent killing germs. You can't help stepping on bugs, you know? We Jains believe that in trillions of years, only one person ever gets to move on. And we just believe it'll go on almost endlessly. We don't believe you can ever stop these other things. When you eat a piece of bread, how many bugs did you kill to give you that piece of bread? So we don't believe that. Yeah.
Michael, what did you import from
Arhat. Arya. What is the difference between Arya and Arhat? Stop seeing things yourself.
What is the difference between Arya and
Arhat? Arya has seen emptiness directly. He's lost that virginity that allows him to change. He has seen emptiness directly. What is in Arhat? He no longer has any bad emotions. Period. Permanent cessation of his bad emotions.
But even the Arya, having had bad emotions, is not going to generate bad karma from it.
Long story. If the Arhat has bodhicitta, on the day he becomes an Arhat, what happens?
He becomes a bodhicitta.
He becomes a Buddha.
Who's that?
Who does that?
A four-year-old is
if you become an arhat.
Yeah.
With bodhicitta in your mental state.
Oh, an arhat.
You're a Buddha. If you get rid of all your bad thoughts, but don't have bodhicitta, what happens? You become a hinayana arhat. That's what they call self in Buddha. Solitary realizing.
So
no.
You say, well, the day you become an arhat.
Shravakas and
Pratika Buddha.
Those are the two. They're not real Buddha. They're just arhat.
But you can develop
if you
later?
Become an arhat.
Okay.
Under the influence of bodhicitta, with bodhicitta in your heart, you become that at that moment. You become if you don't have bodhicitta,
you will never become.
And just clean out all your bad thoughts permanently. You become a lower arhat. Now, what happens to lower arhats? They got to go up again to the bodhisattva level and go all the way down to the bodhisattva, and then finally they get to Buddha. They still have a lot of work to go.
But there also, Michael, this is a Buddhahood and arahat ship are the last birth or reincarnation?
Well, that's what arahat means.
Yeah.
An arahat does not have 8 and 9. He never triggered any
right.
Time.
So when you become either a Buddha or an arahat, okay,
yeah.
And an arahat just being you know, we could say it's a Hinayana Buddha, for instance. Or
well, you could say Hinayana Arhat.
A
Hinayana Arhat. A Mahayana Arhat and a Buddha is the same thing.
Right, so this makes, you know, right. So a Buddha or a Hinayana Arhat, then, that's their last incarnation? I mean, that's the same form
that's
that they have all the time?
That's their last samsaric life.
That's the last samsaric life. Okay, So then they incarnate as something then that is not going to reincarnate anymore in non-samsaric fashion? So that's a permanent, whatever the last samsaric life, the very next life after that, that's a permanent form for them for the rest of eternity.
With Hinayana Arhat, you've got to talk about it. And the different schools have different beliefs. I'm not going to. Basically,
or is this something where they'll end that existence, but they'll have another enlightened existence someplace else or some
something
other way?
Something like that. Depends on which school you're
in. Okay,
you ready? And then we'll stop. But I just wanted to get you the key. That's what you always wanted to know, and what always was confusing, right? How does those last moments work? What's the point of saying if you don't have desire? It doesn't refer to desire, right? It refers to desire that a self-existent me be happy, that a self-existent me not self. It depends on the perception of me as self.
But when you say that you want to be happy, and what are you talking about?
Because it makes
you.
Sense.
No,
I'll
when
get
you
I'll
give
get
that.
I understand.
Okay.
But it makes sense, doesn't it? You know, it's not wrong to want to be happy. And it's otherwise, why would you ever strive for Buddhahood? Why would you strive to become Vajrayogini if it's wrong to be happy? Or if it's wrong to want to be happy? You know, that's... Now, when I say Michael Roach wants to be happy, am I perceiving a Michael Roach who will undertake actions that have nothing to do with my happiness to be happy?
No.
If I do, it's separate. It's crazy. If I don't think of myself that way, it's not craving, and it will just help me. It would be great. That's the key. Why? That's the one thing that'll keep
me. But
when
you were saying that somebody who has had the theme emptiness, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't they feel the way you just?
Sure.
But you're saying they do take rebirth.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, because they still see themselves as self-existent.
And you don't?
You can't ask me that. I'm just a normal guy. Panchakepa means that innate grasping for self. Seeing yourself as self. Bugs have that. Amoebas have that. Dogs have that. Panchakepa, makpangchir. Makpang means they have not gotten rid of it. Chir means because. So what he's saying here is that if getting rid of all forms of seeing yourself as self-existent and believing yourself as self-existent was all it took to finish your rebirth, well then, the moment you saw emptiness directly, what?
You would never have to be born again.
But he says, It's not true because they have not yet given up the innate form of grasping to themselves, which means to see themselves as suffering.
Okay.
And then the last line is a nice line to end on. Fang Nayan. But if you were to Fang, what's Fang? Fun. If you were to give it up, what?
Oh,
seeing yourself as something.
Then you wouldn't have any.
Sipa, yeah, good. Sipa means rebirth. Kalayu means where on earth could it happen? How on earth could you ever have to take another rebirth?
Na'an, I'm sorry, I lost the na'an part.
Fang na'an means. But if you did get rid of it, it's how to see yourself as suffering.
So bang na'an.
Bang means get rid.
Oh, sorry.
Na'an means but if you were.
Thank you.
Sipa means reaper. Kalayu means come on. How could it ever happen?
Thank you.
That's a good place.
Could you walk the whole thing?
Just the basic is this. Dhammakirti said at the beginning of the class, the reason a person has to take rebirth, the reason the mind has to flop over into the same stuff is that that mind has desire. I didn't like that. It didn't sound reasonable to me. What's desire got to do with the mind continuing into the other mind? Ah, but if it's that desire means desiring a self-existent me, not to end. And that perception of a self-existent me karmically causes me to have another perception of the mind. And that's a little tricky. What I'm saying is that the desire that Dharmakirti is talking about is the trigger desire. The trigger desire depends on misperceiving yourself. It wants me to be happy and has no knowledge of what I'm supposed to do to get that. It's going to go to work tomorrow and work hard to be happy. To work hard to get more money. It has nothing to do with getting more money. If you want more money, collect a similar cost. What's a similar cost? Give away money. I mean, the best Wall Street young broker who wants to get ahead and should go give money away. That's the only cost for giving away. If getting rid, of any form of ignorance, let's say it this way, if getting rid of the basic forms of ignorance, and then he doesn't say the rest of the sentence, okay? This is code. Okay. Were enough not to take rebirth. Were enough not to have to take rebirth. Okay? Getting rid of the most basic forms of ignorance were enough not to have to take rebirth.
You're saying that's implied.
Yeah, it is implied, sorry. Okay? Well then, at the very beginning of the path of seeing implied, then you fill in the rest. What would happen? You wouldn't have to take any more rebirth. You wouldn't have to do anything else. Because he did get rid of what?
Of believing.
Believing in his self-existence. We got two lines covered, right? Now we're on the third line.
What was the last part of this?
Yeah, okay. That's a pretty good thing. You read to me what you have, and I'll fill it.
If getting rid of any basic form of ignorance were enough not to take rebirth, well then, at the very beginning, the path of seeing,
you would never have to take rebirth again.
And then you said something else.
That's fine. You would never have to take rebirth again.
If you had to.
And I like it, because we're ending with, like, I consider Dharmakirti's most important verse of all the hundreds of verses he wrote. Then I don't mind if you put in that translation now, why? Understood. Because he has not gotten rid of, he or she has not gotten rid of the inborn ignorance, form of ignorance. How would you describe Pedron? The inborn form of ignorance.
It sees
things as
self. Right, it sees things as self-existent.
It doesn't have to be a belief. You cannot believe it. If you're not, you don't believe it. If you're not an eye, you do believe it. It's just seeing things as self. And the last line says, but if you were to get rid of what? Get rid of what? Yeah, good. That advanced form of ignorance, right? That deep form of ignorance. Okay? I'll say it again. But if you were to get rid of that deep form of ignorance, and you all know that I mean as you start to grasp to yourself in the last moments of this life, well then, Sipa Kalaya, how could you ever take rebirth? Meaning a bad rebirth, right? I'm sorry. Good place to start, kindly. Mm-hmm. The next class is a review, right? And did we set a date for your final?
Yes, I'll do that.
1 week later.
Okay, cool.
If you feel you need more time for your final, I don't care if you come and take it any other time. If you're going to be going somewhere and you want to do it on another night earlier, I don't care either. You're welcome to do that. The finals will be on this table. You find somebody with a key. If you don't have a key and you want a key, let me know. I'll give you a key. You're welcome to come here anytime and use this room for good purposes. Just please remember to lock the door. I'll give you a key. And then you can come and take it anytime you want. Or find somebody who has a Kylie other key. Kylie has a key. Anybody else have a key? You can copy Kylie's key, or I'll give you a key to copy me. I'll go out and make them tomorrow. And you're welcome to come and use this room. You're welcome to come and give yourself your own exam. Leave it on the table. And then your new class will start on October 18th. I'm sorry. 17th, yeah.
Will there be a quiz on Monday?
We covered him already. That was in that because of this, he's that, because of that, he's this. Then by proving that he's the. Because he has compassion, that proves his protection. Those were the other three. They already did them.
This is the